In the Ring with Eusebius Makaiser. Eusebius Makaiser.
Is there a place for struggle iconography and struggle songs in contemporary South Africa? An example of that question would be Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer. Should it be illegal to sing it? And putting the law aside, even if it is not illegal, is it just a bad idea, ethically and politically? Those were the cluster of questions that broadcaster Oliver Dixon had asked me to think through, and for once it was really nice to actually be answering questions and to be interviewed as an interviewee, rather than having the responsibility of actually moderating the discussion. This happened a few days ago on SAFM, a talk radio station on SABC. Many of you are familiar with it. I loved it so much that I thought it would be really awesome if you also listened to how that exchange had gone down between me and Oliver and listeners on the SABC platform SAFM in case you had missed it. So this is, courtesy the SABC, that conversation between myself and Oliver on the basic question with not so basic answers: is there a place for struggle iconography, including struggle songs, in contemporary South Africa? Enjoy this one.
In the Ring with Eusebius Makaiser. Eusebius
Makaiser. I've been thinking about this for a while, and the dust has settled, and we can have this conversation in a very, very sober way. Today, I want us to discuss, in a thinking point, the AfriForum EFF judgment, but not quite the judgment. More importantly, the questions that emanate out of the judgment. For context, if you may, for some other reason, missed what the judgment is, AfriForum took the EFF to court for singing at a rally, Kill the Boer, Kiss the Boer, whichever iteration, was sang at any given time. And they asked the court to declare the lyrics of the speech as hate speech. The court obviously said, no, we will not do so. Neither will we interdict the EFF from singing the song. On many different platforms, the judgment has been, I guess, discussed. People wrote about it. Many different people wrote about it. Amazing material about the actual judgment, analysis about the judgment is out there. But stepping away from, the legal detail for a little bit, there are some serious political questions we need to ask ourselves about that particular judgment, and about the place that that judgment has in our political discourse. And that is the question: what role at all, or does our struggle iconography and memorabilia, such as songs, have a place in our modern day society? And is it a legitimate form of political expression? What does it mean to be able to say it is part of a legitimate political expression? Should we still care today about struggle songs? That's the bottom line of the question. My guest for the Thinking Point conversation this morning, a good friend of mine, broadcaster, author, as well as political analyst and podcaster, Eusebius Makaiser. Eusebius, good morning.
Good morning, Oliver, and good morning to all of your listeners, and thanks so much for inviting me on the show.
You grew up in Grahamstown, a relatively, I would say, monolithically colored neighborhood. But you went to Model C schools.
Yes.
Do you know any struggle songs?
I'm just young enough to sort of be the end of the anti-apartheid era. In the late 80s, I was a lighty. So I wasn't on the periphery of the last batch of marches and stoking the fire. So I don't know them personally. I entered this conversation really, like you, as a post-apartheid adult with a deep interest in some of the normative and principled questions that are raised by it.
Yeah. But I mean, so I'm from the Feesmas Fall era. Struggle songs were a big part of my new struggle songs, by the way, with new lyrics, newly composed. These guys are amazing. I don't know how we come up with these songs, but they're amazing. And it formed a big part of my university experience. And I understood it to be an important mechanism for collectivizing and rallying. And it's a powerful tool to do that. Today still, it's a powerful tool to do that. This is why DA rallies, for instance, are often so boring. I went to the DA manifesto launch, and I mean, they had They had nothing fun. But if you go to an ANC rally, the songs move you quite literally.
Yeah.
Right. And there seems to be a close interlink, and this is obviously not where what the conversation is about.
Mm.
A close interlink between our church history as a country and our struggle song history, where if you're interested in the musical format of it, there's a very close similarity, right?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when I was in primary school, for example, you know, the local high school in Grahamstown, there was a lot of political activity there. Small little dorps in the Eastern Cape, like Ekurhuleni, Grahamstown, now Makhanda, are often left out of the big narratives of anti-apartheid struggle.
Yeah.
But across the Eastern Cape and the country for that matter, in small towns, villages, cities that are not massive, there was important sites of struggle against apartheid.
Mm.
And a big part of that are symbols, banners,
yeah,
imagery, as well as chanting. And obviously I didn't think with sophistication as a child, but the songs, whether in Afrikaans, English, or isiXhosa, were never, to my mind, intuitively about wanting to run off to Somerset Heights, which is where white people live in Grahamstown, and to go and kill each and every single one of them. Now that I have the language as a political analyst, as an adult, it's clear to me that those songs served two purposes. One has nothing to do with lyrical content, like you said. It is just at an aesthetic level and at the level of group formation, getting everyone actually psyched up,
yeah,
for the struggle against the system. You know, it's like starting the morning, let's say, for example, with a 5-minute American giving you a motivational speech on SAFM.
Yeah.
It's just setting the scene.
Yeah. Getting my day started.
Yeah. And sometimes, even if you're not listening to the content, there's just something about that familiar sound in the background for the first 5 minutes, even if you're not actively listening to the lyrical content,
yeah,
or the content of the motivational speaker, that just sets the scene. The second thing with retrospect that is very clear to me was going on is that when you do listen to the words, it is not obvious, depending on the context, which we'll come back to, it's not obvious that you are targeting an individual, but a system.
Yeah.
And it was the system of apartheid that was the legitimate target of the iconography, the symbols, the sloganeering, as well as the content of many of the struggle songs. And that's important, because what EfriForum gets wrong is the assumption that the words of Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer is literal, only ever literal, never anything but literal, and that black people are incapable of songs
context
that actually have different purposes across context.
Yeah.
In some contexts, you could still be nostalgically recalling the struggle against apartheid as a commemorative event, but if you had to declare this struggle song a priori, always and permanently into the future as hate speech, then if we go to the Apartheid Museum and the elders wanted to simply perform it as a chant, as part of a commemoration of the struggle,
right,
they would be engaging in something unlawful, according to AfriForum, which is stupid. So context is everything.
Yeah. We'll get into some of the context just now, right? But I think we must start then at the first place. Do these songs have a place in our society today other than being nostalgic?
Yeah, they do, for two reasons. Because history matters in terms of where we come from. It's amazing how ahistorical even many of us as journalists can be. So when we tell stories about how a particular community came about, and I'm being utterly random with this example, Oliver, but let's say you want to understand Marikana. Let's say you want to understand the latest service delivery protests.
Mm.
It's really important as a scribe, but also as a broadcaster for that matter, and definitely as an analyst, to be able to bring context to your reportage.
Mm.
And part of that context means tapping into history. So that's an indirect answer to your question in the first instance, but it is to say that insofar as iconography, struggle songs, symbols, etc., are part of that rich and important struggle history, it will always be legitimate in an accurate description of contemporary South African landscape, which has dots connected to the past. So in that sense, it's relevant. But the second bit, perhaps to, I don't know, fast forward a little bit,
is that the judicial officer in this particular case said something interesting, Oliver, that has nothing to do with law. And they made the point that in some context, as a black South African, you could be tapping into a struggle song as a way to critique a black-led state.
Mm.
So even if there were no white people in South Africa, theoretically speaking, there's still an instrumental value to some of the struggle songs. Because singing that song right now, as a black person, against Cyril, might be a way in which you are critiquing the ANC. And then the question has got to be asked, why is a white person catching feelings? Because actually, in that example, it is actually a black-on-black dialogue through the song.
Yeah, we'll ask the question at the end, why do white people catch feelings and tap into white fragility?
Good morning, Oliver Lukman, Cape Town. Oliver, struggle songs is part of our history. It's part of what was fought for. And one can never just put it in a box and hide it away. But Oliver, for me, that song, Kill the Boo, it is just as disgusting as the K word. I cannot celebrate the judgment. That song has no place in 2022, no place in South Africa, so I will not celebrate that judgment with the EFF. It's disgusting, just as the K word. Thank you.
Good morning, Oliver. We call them struggle songs. They are not relevant now. The time for the struggle songs is over because we found freedom. Maybe during the political rallies, yes. But just for now, I don't think they are no more in use. They are obsolete. We should be concentrating on building our country. Thank you. Adam.
Good morning. Struggle songs are no longer valid these days. The struggles that we are facing today is a struggle about unemployment, inequality, crime, illegal foreign nationals who are in this country, township economy that is taken over by these people from Somalia, Ethiopia, and Afghanistan, and Bangladesh. Thank you. This is a struggle that we are faced with today. We need to create a song about the issues that I've mentioned that we are giving us headache on a daily basis. Thank you, Lucas Matlango, Mpumalanga.
Yeah, Lucas, I think compose some new ones. It would be interesting to hear what you come up with. It's because that first voice note for me was interesting, where you can say, I see the place of struggle songs in society today. They're part of who we are, part of our history. Just not that one.
Yeah, and then he equates it with a K word, which I have a problem with. There's no context in which the K word, to my mind, could possibly be salvaged. The K word, like the N word, has one and one function only: to trample on the dignity of the individual black person it is hurled at and black people as a group. And that is why it is categorically racist and not protected speech. Struggle song will, as Pierre de Vos says in his latest blog entry on constitutionallyspeaking.co.za, cross-posted on dailymaverick.co.za, that it depends on context. There can be, and here he criticized the judgment in a way that I actually thought was fair, there can be context in which singing Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer could be incitement.
Yeah.
But it's also true that there can be contexts where it is simply a nostalgic trip down memory lane. And so the question then becomes, should we ban the song in all contexts categorically, or should we allow ourselves to use common sense and to differentiate contexts where it is being sung for commemorative, artistic, research, whatever the case might be, you know, reasons, from occasions where the objective facts of that situation suggest that it's being used to agitate the actual murder of actual real phenotypically white people. And my problem with that first call is the implication, which is similar to the views of Aaron Roots and everyone else in Every Forum, that we should have one interpretation for all context of the song. And I think that's absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. What if you have a gathering of, for example, vets from military wings of our former liberation organizations, and they start off a meeting by singing some of these songs.
Mm.
Should they be criminalized in that context? That to me seems utterly irrational.
So Pierre Defosse makes the hypothetical example of angry EFF protesters outside the courtroom in Senegal, for instance, where that case itself is a racially charged case.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the point that he makes. He says that what AfriForum did poorly in the case, and the judge correctly pointed out this weakness, is that AfriForum demonstrated soft bigotry by thinking that the only meaning of this song is a literal one.
Yeah.
As if black people are incapable of complexity creatively, artistically, politically. But then he says, where unfortunately the court, in his opinion as a legal expert, then does not tie a proper bow around the analysis, is to connect this case to the Kwelane one by also reminding, even if it is in a footnote, as it were, the public that just because AfriForum got it wrong on this particular occasion doesn't mean that we are suggesting that this song could not, in some context with the right facts, amount to hate speech. But that context is everything. If you remember nothing else about the legal part of this discussion, context is everything.
Yeah.
And the problem with the entire AfriForum case is that they basically think that black people are robots. You will hear the song, interpret it literally, and go and find your BFF who's white and kill them. I mean, that's just nonsense.
Yeah, yeah. You inadvertently described what hate speech is just now when you delineated the K word from the song, right? So we now know what hate speech is. What is incitement?
Well, think about it just, and the good thing about South African law and most legal systems that are rational is that there are, yes, technicalities, which is why you and I have to interview and engage the legal experts on these questions. But most legal systems are also not so fundamentally irrational that you can't work out a bulk of the issues for yourself. In order for the incitement threshold to be passed, it must be the case, reasonably, that we interpret your singing of the song as the one who's doing the singing to be such that you want the people that you are singing it with to be motivated by it to actually cause harm. And that harm is directed at whoever is in the lyrics. So through the analysis of Aaron's roots, the singing of those lyrics in any context is aimed at imminently harming physically white people. And my question is to the three people that called in, and I'm here being very speculative, I think all three of them were black, which is really interesting, is do you as a black person, even if you think the song doesn't have a place in contemporary South Africa because you want us to talk about unemployment, however, when you do hear the song, do you take that song as a command to go and kill a white person?
Look, South Africa is a country where all those within it must feel safe, right? And even the threat of violence is a threat to your safety, even if the violence never occurs, right? If I'm a white farmer somewhere in the middle of the Free State, and I turn on the TV and in Bloemfontein outside the courtroom, Julius Malema is singing Kill the Boer, or whatever rally song the moment calls for, I can imagine being fearful.
Yes, and it brings me to the question you posed before we went to the break. What counts as controversial or divisive? And now you've added to that, particularly important at a psychological level, what about my subjective feelings of feeling fearful? And I think here there's an important gray area that we will have to explore, which is to say, does every occasion, and I'll separate it into law and social and political issues, does every occasion of me sincerely feeling threatened justify constraining what someone else can do? And the answer is no. Sometimes I will have delicate feelings, genuinely delicate about my safety. It doesn't follow from that the law should stop someone else from commemorating a struggle song that was key to the march to the Union Buildings in 56, for example. And I think it's really important that we separate my sincere feelings from whether or not we should go so far as to criminalize every such particular instance. And I'm not convinced that we should.
Okay.
Hi, Oliver. If I had to walk around the street singing, kill the Zimbabwean, kill the colored, kill anybody you like, I'd be arrested. And the irony of this court judgment is that the South African flag, orange, white and blue, I think it was, is banned as hate speech. How can you ban the flag and not ban a song like that? Mike East London.
Good morning. There's absolutely no justification for that song. It's a hate speech. It says kill the Boer. It says kill the Boer. There's nothing about kiss the Boer. We never heard of such. We know their song. So there's no justification for it. It mustn't be allowed. That's it. It's mustn't.
Morning, Oliver. As someone who's a direct victim of the Brixton murder and robbery unit that killed my father in 1991 and left my mother for dead, whom today she still has those scars, those songs for me are relevant. But that song does not mean I will wake up today and go and kill white people. I work with white people even currently. So I don't know the AfriForum takes us for what, that black people will sing and then we just take a butchers and butcher white people. No, those songs, they talk to us. That's police. Thank you. Vuyani in Orange Farm.
I know we would be going back to rehashing context, which we already discussed, but do you want to respond to the false equivalence of the first voice note?
Yeah, there is a false equivalence, and let's explain that very simply. There is no historical oppression from coloured people against white people in South Africa.
Hmm.
There's no, in recent history, at a systemic level, oppression from Zimbabweans as a nation against South Africans as citizens of a South African nation state. And so going out here outside Radio Park and saying, kill coloured people, has got no historical context to it in which I can make sense of it being part of an anti-colonial or an anti-apartheid struggle. Therefore, it's very different to the historical meaning of struggle songs. So as much as I understand the attempt at the analogy in the first caller, it is, as you technically say, completely a false equivalence between the two cases. Similarly, with the apartheid flag. The apartheid flag is a symbol of a crime against humanity. There's no context in which, and actually our law is sufficiently complex to even recognize the flag having exceptions.
Mm.
There may be context where, for example, there is legitimate creative expression. For example, if you are writing a play in which that flag has to feature, it wouldn't amount to hate speech. And again, context matters. But it is easier to make sense of the apartheid flag as an obvious universal symbol when it is just gratuitously displayed at my home as a crime against humanity and therefore racist. Because, again, that is a celebration of white supremacy. But when you sing that chant commemoratively, not as incitement, you are simply revisiting the struggle against a system of anti-black oppression. So these calls that try and put these things on the same footing demonstrate an inability to differentiate historical facts.
Should English white South Africans feel threatened when white Afrikaners sing their struggle songs? General de la Rey.
That's a fantastic example, because again, if you want to, depending on which side of the old struggles between English and Afrikaans white people, or whatever position you take on the South African war and what had happened, depending on your politics, if you want to sing particular songs or even just reproduce other forms of iconography, symbols, other aesthetic objects, I think that context again will matter. If you're doing so as an expression of your political conviction, I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that. Oliver, we've got to cut through the absolute BS of this entire discussion. In the worst case scenario, singing this song doesn't help us to solve the unemployment crisis. That's the worst case. But the idea that the real worst case is that this song will inspire black people to behave like murderers is an insult to black people.
And unemployable.
Including black people that may actually agree that the song shouldn't be sung. Because the people who are most objecting to the song have a view of black humanity that is actually really disgusting. The people who really don't want the song to be sung genuinely believe that the average black person has got such a low IQ
yeah.
and is so easily persuaded by their passion and triggered by memory of anti-apartheid struggle that they will go out right now and go and kill a white person. And I reject that view of black people.
The average black person is the last voice note we received.
Precisely. And that was a powerful, powerful voice note. Because there you have a person who was a victim directly, not just even at the level of petty apartheid or at the level of institutionalized discrimination, but directly in your family having the most violent form
yeah.
of anti-black racism being experienced and suggesting that it's not going to inspire me to go and kill my colleagues.
Yeah. So before we went to break, I asked you the question, what about the white farmer who has seen his neighbors die at the hands of presumably black murderers, as is the picture they paint? And you turn on the TV and in Bloemfontein outside the courtroom, there's an EFF rally that seems really charged. And you made two points, but the second point you made there was that, my psychological safety effectively ends at the point where it infringes on somebody's ability to express themselves politically and whether or not that is in the form of struggle song. That's conceptually how I understood the point to be made. I hope I'm not straw-manning or misconstruing your point. I'm a little bit uncomfortable about that, all right? Because the person who sings the song loses nothing by not singing the song. But the person who feels unsafe turning on the TV and thinking, yo, just last week, two of my neighbors were murdered, right? And they were white. And here these guys are outside the courtroom in Bloemfontein, 40 kilometers from me, singing the song. That psychological safety, I think, should trump the ability for anyone to be able to express that song.
Thank you for coming back to it, because I was behaving like a broadcaster
watching the clock.
Instead of actually unpacking it and leaving you to worry about the clock at 9:30. Because the psychological safety point that you make is powerful, and I don't want to push back on it. I think that we are entitled to feel safe, and that psychological safety and psychological violence as a corollary should be taken as seriously as directly physically assaulting you. And therefore, questions about whether I feel safe in this land as a black, colored, white, pink, orange person is really important. And as you know, the only value in our constitution that can never be circumscribed, even during a state of emergency, is the right to dignity.
Yeah.
Even more than equality and the right to freedom.
Mm.
So dignity is important, and dignity is the prism through which we should relate to each other and make sense of rights and relationships even beyond legal analysis. So I totally agree with you on that, which is why I would say that even though I spent most of the hour defending the place of iconography, I don't want the law to tell me that there's no context in which I can commemorate struggle song. A separate question is, should I use my freedom to always do so? And I think as individuals listening to this conversation, I would argue you should ask yourself, what is my purpose and what is the impact regardless of my intention? Mm. And let that be your guide about whether you want to sing a song, where and when. That for me is what is really, really important. And so if I know that I'm doing it to be gratuitous, provocative, and to make someone feel unsafe, secure on the knowledge that the law's on my side, then you might be behaving lawfully but unethically. And if you are a political leader who are deliberately using a legal victory and weaponizing that legal victory to make white people feel uncomfortable and hoping that you will come across as a real bastion for the continued fight for justice in post-apartheid South Africa, sidebar EFF, then of course you may also be showing poor political leadership.
Mm.
So I don't disagree with you at all.
Yeah, Lenzi, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm fantastic, so how are you doing?
Yes, I'm all right.
Mm. Go ahead, what's your comment this morning?
Yeah, let me weigh in on the discussion about that song, which is Kill the Poor and Kill the Farmer, which was sent by the AFF and just taken to court. Even though I did not get the context of the verdict from the court, however, I would like just to weigh in on the song itself and narrate Boa in my context. I'm an African person, a middle-aged person, who was born during the apartheid regime. My father was a proletariat, and I'm a proletariat as well. So the word Boer to me represent a person who presided over a system which was oppressing the black in particular, and the blacks and Africans in particular in the name. So when the phrase kill the Boer, kill the farmer is used, it's not necessarily at this day and age mean a white man or mean a Boer person, but it is directed to anyone who is oppressing one way or the other any other person out here in South Africa during this day and age. So the word Boer now, in this context, stands for a person who's oppressing another person. That's why in townships and in the villages, when a person has become successful, but they normally say, "Use umlungu manje," he's a white person now. Or when a person is successful and then he's got the company and is mistreating people, they say, "Hey, ibhunu ubani," because that is leveled against anyone who's doing an injustice to an African person or a black person in this country. That is my version.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that. Really insightful. Thank you so much for that call. Pongani in KZN. Good morning.
Yes, Oliver.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes. Immediately when you say kill the listener, then I would start to be shaking.
We don't kill listeners here. You're safe with us. You're safe.
Yes. We only kiss listeners.
Hallelujah. Praise the Lord. With information, of course. And then Contitus once said, when whites lose their meaning, people lose their freedom. You see, it becomes a problem if ever maybe we are having judgment of this nature. It's like you've taken somebody from somewhere and then bring it here. And we should be mindful of everything which is actually happened before democracy and during democracy, so that at the end of the day, we have proper judgment, that at the end, it won't be life which will be. We're talking about the number of people who have been just because of that. We're talking about a song here, a song which has got an impact to have other people's temperament being built up, and then thereafter they resort to anything. And then we're saying it's a good judgment in that way. What are we? Which means we've got to depart the leader, because you see what it has now indicated, that even the judiciary should be questioned then, therefore, if ever maybe there are things of this nature which they're going to allow under these circumstances of which you are saying, whereby not only an individual is actually killed, but a number of people, but you are actually like enjoying it.
Can I ask you this question? And I mean, we'll go back to the judgments a little later on to speak about what this means, but can you, in recent memory, think of an instance where a struggle song was sung and as a result, people were killed?
You see, fortunately, I'm from KZN. You see, I've got a lot of experience. Well, it's quite a problem here. You've got people who are actually making anything, sitting in the office. You see, I myself, my God, has actually allowed me to be exposed to different scenarios whereby I can tell you about what is going on in South Africa. And at the end of the day, support it with a lot of, you see, I've got a package of this. They are actually in the number for 1 million, 1 million. There are quite a lot of people who are actually, directly or indirectly, and they are continuing actually like that. Why? Because we've got people who are just sitting in the office and then they make the judgment. We people in the grassroots, you see, the country cannot be governed from the parliament only. It should also be governed from the grassroots.
What I like is that you're from KZN, which has a very peculiar history in South Africa, both historically and today. So maybe you have access to a set of examples that I may not have access to, as someone who doesn't live in KZN. Okay. In recent times, has there been an instance where a struggle song was sang and people, particularly white people, were killed?
It's just unfortunate, because you see, there is no need even now to actually like single songs. That is where we are even losing it, which means we put more time to look. That's the reason why we engage ourselves in this shutdown. Obviously, they are not actually like coming up with a fruitful thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Because that is
Okay, we're going to have to leave you there. Thank you so much for your call, Bongani. Really, really do appreciate it. Eusebius, how important is the evidentiary burden in an incitement conversation?
It's everything. Before, I like the way you framed this entire hour. Put the judgment aside and let's just speak as South Africans one to another. Do these songs have a place in our lives currently? But on the legal question, your last caller, I'm afraid, is dodging a very important question. I almost said bullet, but the pun might be too much. One of the most important reasons why AfriForum lost this case is that none of their, I almost said expert, but they weren't accepted as experts, none of their witnesses could prove an empirical link between the song being sung and actual harm. So there's the claim. And if you interview them, if Erwin's is listening, I've interviewed him many a time about these things over the years as a broadcaster myself. I'll happily debate him on any forum. They start using more and more vague language and reduce the burden for themselves. And they will start saying things like, it creates an atmosphere that is conducive to killing. You know, ask yourself, like, what does that actually mean? Right? An atmosphere that is conducive to what? Because unless you have actual robust data that farm killings result from the singing of the song, then you can't claim that it actually is incitement. One of their witnesses, Oliver, was so poorly chosen, also as legal strategy for lawyers listening, aspiring lawyers, that they had someone in that was sharing their experience of being a victim of criminality by young black men way before the song was sung by EFF and EFF Formation. And there are two important things from that particular part of the case. The first is that there's such a desperation to erase struggle iconography because white people don't want to be implicated in the history of racism, that you desperately bring in a victim of a farm attack before Julius had even sung the song, which is very telling. And secondly, when the young black person that you are now pathologizing as a foot soldier of the EFF, before EFF sung the song, by the way, had attacked you, you didn't ask them to stop and to say, hey, Tampi, before you go off, having just shot me, can you please just tell me whether you heard the song 5 minutes ago?
Yeah.
So it's at best speculative
what
the motives are of criminals, whether the criminal is black or white. But there's such a desperation to put the song on trial that people who don't like the song because they don't want to talk about the past suddenly impute inspiration for criminality to the song on the part of the criminal without any evidence.
Which is vastly different from reading Mein Kampf, killing somebody and then edging a swastika onto their chest.
110%, because then it's very clear that they are imbued with a certain kind of supremacist thought. And I think here, Oliver, something that you said to me offline, and I don't know how much time we'll have to get into it, is important. I liked what you said earlier, and you will know that we've had this discussion. We're friends, so I'm not sure which discussions are always formal, which are offline, around whether white people should sing lyrics containing the N-word. And Ta-Nehisi Coates asked the question, what will you lose if you never say the word, even if the law allows you to say the word? Just ask yourself, if your vocabulary is reduced by one word, is going to stop you from having fun expressing yourself? And if it won't, just don't use the word. And you said something similar about the song. If not singing the song isn't going to like stop you, including from being an activist effectively against Ramaphosa, then why make that farmer feel bad if they still have trauma having just experienced a farm attack? I think that's right. But I want to say that there's another question you should ask the white person that may be annoyed that's listening to me right now. And the question is, for them, just like the question of what will happen if I don't sing the song, and surely if nothing will happen, I shouldn't sing that song, why are you touched on your white studio? Why are you so fragile? Why, as Aaron's roots, is this the centerpiece of your legal activism? And I want every white person in particular listening to SAFM right now who is triggered by the song or this conversation to self-examine what is it about the conversation that triggers me and to sit with that quietly and deeply, and I don't mean it condescendingly, it is a genuine challenge to fellow white South Africans. Just as a black political leader is deliberately being divisive, and that's bad political leadership, Similarly, for a white person that is fearful of the song being sung, why is that? And I think that kind of white fragility is really important to unpack. And I suspect part of the uncomfortable answer is that many white people do not like historical conversations because they are desperate for the proverbial clean slate.
Yeah. Nonde in Cape Town. Good morning.
I'm now cool, Shama. Yo. It's getting sick, huh? I could have been saying, hey, my good dinner, Kusha, but to be politically correct, I would say, Bafana Bam, near Kusha. And I don't mean Bafana, the bad loser.
Yeah.
Hey, okay. Please, no. Rather say Banyana.
Now, Oliver Dixon, if you go to Plain Street in Cape Town, next to Parliament, there's a water farmer, right, who we bought. His statue is there. It reads the farmer, statesman, the warrior. And then translation in Afrikaans will be the boer, whatever, right?
Mm.
Now, if that is offensive to some people, I don't know what is, right? Now, to say kill the boer, kill the farmer, right? If you interpret that metaphorically, as your guest says there, Black people are capable of thinking in complexity.
Yeah.
When you say kill the boer, kill the farmer, what you actually mean back in the apartheid days, even now for that matter, you mean kill the system. Right? So it's metaphorically. It's not the human being
who's
murder. And that is racist. That is wrong.
Yeah.
And when it says kill the boer, right, I know that, I mean, they're not really meaning kiss literally, right? They are meaning kiss, right? In other words, SS changed from LL, kill, right? But again, it is metaphorically because it refers to the system, right? Black people have been doing apartheid. When we say kill the boer, kill the farmer, nobody would rush, whether you call it incitement or whatever, to kill the white, right? And lastly,
very briefly, Nonde, we pressed for time. Very briefly, 30 seconds.
2015, when we're burying Balfour, not the former minister was there. The comrades of the deceased refused to sing the national anthem with all its Afrikaans and English version. They said, let us sing the proper national anthem. In other words, we cannot erase our history. Thank you, Oliver Dixon.
Thank you so much for that, Nonde. We really do appreciate it. Taking our final call, Max and Valcom. I'm so sorry, Max, but we only have a minute for you. Please go ahead.
Okay, excellent contribution from Eusebius. Thank you very much for the discussion. There's one aspect that I think you didn't touch, especially as far as the legality of the matter is concerned, in the terms of lawyers pressing for aspects in their case which they cannot prove on the table. Like in the Oscar Pistorius case, where you couldn't actually say the person wanted to kill this person directly.
Yeah.
In this discussion, one aspect, Oliver, that I think maybe should have been touched is to what extent are we damaging the nation building or contributing towards or against it?
Yeah.
I think all this discourse has to reflect on that aspect because that is what's supposed to be preoccupying us in terms of trying to bring together the nation.
Beautiful interjection over there, Max. Beautiful interjection. Eusebius?
Yeah, maybe this will set us up for another conversation next time you invite me on. Let's actually make the date. I think the answer to the last caller is very simple. If you don't sing the song, do you have a united South Africa? The answer is absolutely no. So it's complete rubbish to imagine that if you sing the song, you're dividing the country because we're not a united country in the first place.
Mm.
Where is the economic justice? Where is the land justice for black people in this country? Where's the respect when you go to work? Where's the elimination of institutional racism, institutional homophobia? Where is the anti-class struggle amongst your white comrades and your white allies? So if we pretend that this song is a threat to unity, then we are assuming that South Africa is an inclusive, united country. It is not.
Yeah. I want you to be a little bit spicy. How bad was the lawyering?
The lawyering was extremely bad. I mean, you've got Aaron's Roots himself, and I'm sorry to come back to him, who thinks that he is the cleverest person in the conversation on racism, even though he denies that it exists. And when he was asked, are you an expert? He verbatim says, yes and no and maybe. So the legal strategy was absolutely terrible. No empirical proof that it is incitement. And also, they wanted to argue that the lyrical content is inherently hate speech, and that the court should never have regard to context. You don't need to be an undergrad law student to understand how elementary those errors were.
Yeah. Eusebius, thank you once again for coming. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I feel indebted to you that I can always call and you'll come into studio and have coffee with me, and we can have these conversations on air.
Thanks for the cappuccino.
Looking forward to having you back on one or other platform on the station discussing having as Max says, the real conversation is what does the Nation Building Project look like? And I think that's incredibly important. So thank you so much for that. Thank you for all the engagement.